And at this time, I'd like to move to our item 8. If you can introduce that item, Mr. Robertson.
Can we have someone close the door? I think we have some conversations going on in the hall.
Okay, item 8 is the revision of waste discharge requirements and reissuance of an MPDS permit for Monterey One Water Regional Wastewater Treatment Plant in Monterey County. I want to note that there's a supplemental sheet in your folders associated with this item. It's mostly an errata. So this item is a proposed revision to the MPDS permit for a regional treatment facility operated by Monterey One Water, formerly known as Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Agency. Monterey One Water requested revisions before the 5-year term expiration for their permit to incorporate changes made to the facility to implement the potable reuse project known as Pure Water Monterey. Changes include new sources of wastewater and adding reverse osmosis brine residuals into the effluent. The order of presentation will be Dr. Peter von Langen of our board, followed by Monterey One Water staff, and then lastly, Manet Berg of the Central Coast Long-Term Environmental Assessment Network, better known as CCLEAN. She'll conclude the presentation with a discussion of harmful blooms in the marine environment. With that, I'll hand it off to Dr. von Langen.
Chair Wolf, members of the board, Peter von Langen, Central Coast Water Board staff, and this is the renewal of the Monterey One Water Regional Water Pollution Control Treatment Plant. The Monterey One Water used to be called the Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Agency, and you saw this overhead figure earlier of the wastewater treatment plant that does secondary treatment in Marina along the Monterey Bay. Dominic Rock showed a similar photo earlier. Here's a schematic showing where the plant is inland from Marina, and the pink lines here are the collection system, showing that it takes wastewater, domestic and industrial wastewater, from the entire Monterey Peninsula, from the city of Salinas, and from the cities or the regions of Castroville and Moss Landing, and pretty much all the areas in between, to Marina for wastewater treatment, and then discharges offshore into the Monterey Bay Sanctuary, approximately 2.5 miles offshore in a depth of about 100 feet, or there's a diffuser system. Today's permit item deals specifically with the discharge offshore into the Monterey Bay Sanctuary. A little facility background is that those regions that were shown in the previous slide serve a population of approximately 279,000 people, and there's a treatment capacity for secondary treatment of approximately 30 million gallons a day. During the dry season, all of this water is further treated for tertiary treatment for irrigated agriculture in the Castroville area along Monterey Bay. Year-round, over 60% of that water is treated for irrigated agriculture. During the wet season, there's no need for irrigated agricultural recycled water, so it's not 100% year-round. Today, we're revising the order because of the new Pure Water Monterey Advanced Water Purification Facility project that is a good example of how the region is adapting to climate change, and I'll go into that further in the talk. This new Pure Water Monterey project allows for expansion of recycled wastewater, and because they're taking in new sources of water and pollutant sources and treating it to discharge into the seaside aquifer for groundwater replenishment and use by the Monterey Peninsula area, there's now going to be a reverse osmosis brine, or I shouldn't say brine, it's a reverse osmosis discharge that will be blended with the secondary effluent going into Monterey Bay. This order specifically, again, deals with the new sources of water to increase recycling and the discharge to the Pacific Ocean. Oops. Here's a few slides that include the current regional treatment plant and its secondary treated wastewater that will be part of the Pure Water Monterey source waters for advanced water purification treatment.
Excuse me, didn't we already We had a matter some months ago when they put the advanced wastewater treatment plant online. And didn't we, I know we permitted the discharge to groundwater that was going to then travel and be pulled up, but didn't we also permit the brine discharge at that time?
That was not permitted in that previous action. That was for the waste discharge requirements to go into the seaside aquifer and reuse that treated water through this
process. So they've been discharged, but they're already discharging this brine?
No, this facility is being built now.
Okay.
And it will not be completed until 2019. So okay. That's when they will start discharging
this brine. Okay, so there's brine going into that outfall now from the advanced wastewater treatment facility.
No, it's not going in there yet. That facility is still being built, and it'll be completed probably in April.
So there's no brine going into the outfall, no RO discharge going in.
There's no RO concentrate going in. What is going in right now is a little bit of hauled saline waste that's blended in after the treatment process that's already permitted. And this is for things like Colligan or rain, water softeners on the order of 30 to 50,000 gallons a day, very small amount. So we have wastewater that's going out of the outfall into the ocean. There's three new sources of waters that will increase recycling at this new Pure Water Monterey Advanced Water Purification Facility. There's agricultural drainage water from the surrounding farms and the tile drainage that will be taken and now collected and taken to the wastewater plant. In addition, there's an industrial agricultural wash water facility that is on the outskirts of Salinas that will be taken to this facility. And there's also urban stormwater runoff from the city of Salinas that will be taken to the new facility. Here's a schematic showing with the existing wastewater at the wastewater plant, these new sources of urban stormwater runoff, the Salinas industrial wastewater from the ag wash water, and the agricultural drainage waters that will go and get mixed with the wastewater, the domestic and industrial wastewater, before the treatment process. So it goes through screening and primary and secondary treatment. And the existing facility that's called the Salinas Valley Recreation Project that takes this treatment further to tertiary treatment, where it's used to irrigate 12,000 acres or more of irrigated agricultural land in the Castroville area, is permitted currently. What's new is this advanced water purification facility down here that will increase the recycled water capacity. And what we are permitting today is the blending of that RO concentrate coming from this facility with the secondary treated water to go out the ocean outfall. Here's a close-up of the advanced water purification facility of Pure Water Monterey. Secondary treated wastewater mixed with the other sources, the new sources, goes through ozone treatment, membrane filtration, reverse osmosis, and UV disinfection and hydrogen peroxide. As you mentioned earlier, Board Member Johnson, this has been permitted to go to the seaside aquifer already. What we're doing today is the reject water from this reverse osmosis that goes to the ocean outfall. And so all this has been permitted already going to the seaside aquifer, and today again we're just dealing with the ocean outfall blending of reverse osmosis, hauled saline waste, and the secondary treated wastewater. So earlier the item 6 by Dominic Rock talked about preparing for climate change, and this project is a great example of what's being done to help with climate changes that are impending. For one, this is a drought-proof water supply by increasing the recycling. It'll help Monterey Peninsula get off the Carmel River, or Cal-Am to get off the Carmel River use that's under a state board order to decrease the use of Carmel River and its impact on endangered species like steelhead. It will improve the water quality in the seaside basin by injection into the seaside aquifer and reduce the seawater intrusion going on there, as well as the existing project of the Salinas Valley Recreation Facility and Castroville Seawater Intrusion Project will increase how much water can be recycled for irrigated agriculture and reduce the pumping of the Salinas Basin and seawater intrusion in that region as well. Another benefit for this project is that overall it will reduce the pollutant discharges to both the surface waters flowing out to the Salinas River and plankton blooms occurring in those freshwaters, as well as the surface water discharges of these waters to the Monterey Bay Sanctuary and reduce the overall pollutant load to the sanctuary. So the main changes to the existing order that we have for the Monterey One Water, or Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Agency, formerly called, is that we're collecting new source waters, or they are collecting new source waters to increase the amount of water for recycling. There's the reverse osmosis concentrate that'll be blended with the secondary treated water and the minor amounts of hauled saline waste. And another main change is because of these different year-round changes in the ratio of reverse osmosis concentrate and to secondary treated water, we're going to have four different effluent limits that will change depending on the ratio of these sources of water. We've also increased the monitoring to account for these new source waters and also increased the amount of monitoring for nutrients going out of the outfall. We did receive a comment during the public comment period from the Otter Project, and it requested that we increase the monitoring for nutrients to a monthly level. In the past, they were just three times a year for total nitrogen as well as total Kildell nitrogen. And they also requested a time schedule order to cease the discharge or remove nitrogen through nitrification and denitrification at the facility for the outfall. We have detailed responses in the staff report, and staff recommendation is to increase the monitoring for nutrients, which was changed in this version of the permit, so that it goes along with the suggestion of increased monthly monitoring for these different nitrogen sources. We received, after a comment period, a letter from Dr. Clarissa Anderson of the Southern California Coastal Ocean Observing System, SCOOS, and to paraphrase her comments were that there was a lot of unknowns about nitrogen sources, but a good compromise would be to increase the monitoring in this permit to monthly monitoring for nutrients. Staff does not recommend a time schedule order for making the facility go to nitrification, denitrification, or a time schedule order to cease discharge of the facility, as it's not possible at this time. Part of the reason based on that is reviewing work done by other researchers in the Monterey area and elsewhere and talking with them and coming to the conclusion that there's no clear link between harmful algal blooms in Monterey Bay and the Monterey One discharge. And those are detailed in the response to comments.
Is that an estimate, a projection?
It's based on amounts of nutrients and other information that Dr. Monet Berg will speak about later following this presentation, talking about the lack of a link between harmful algal blooms and the Monterey One water discharge and what causes harmful algal blooms, both outside of Monterey Bay and those that are started within Monterey Bay. There's also a attachment 2 of the staff report is a attachment that has a mass balance study by Trussell Technologies that shows a decrease in the overall nutrient loads to Monterey Bay based on the Pure Water Monterey project. So the staff recommendations are to order or adopt the order presented in front of you with changes in the supplemental sheet that you received with minor errors and clerical errors that have been changed. Following this presentation is Monterey One. We'll give a presentation regarding the Pure Water Monterey project, and then after that, Dr. Monet Berg of Applied Marine Sciences and the Central Coast Long-Term Environmental Assessment Network will give a presentation about harmful algal blooms and the relationship to Monterey One water. And I'm here for questions now, or if you'd rather hear the other two speakers first. Yeah, it's
can you go to slide 10? So you're on the item 3, halts saline waste or saline waste. Better putting the accent in the right syllable here. Hauling it where?
There's a program that they have at Monterey One Water to reduce the salts that go through the wastewater treatment facility, because with their goal of recycling all of their wastewater for irrigation at agricultural facilities, you don't want to have salts in that water for the plants to grow better. So they have a program where they take like Culligan recharge canisters or from Rain or other companies, and they take these salts, and they have them in a large pond that gets metered in slowly with what is being discharged from the secondary effluent out to the ocean outfall. And it's only on the order of, say, 30 to 50,000 gallons a day that are metered in versus an average of 18 million gallons a day of secondary treated effluent that's
okay,
going
out. Okay, so it's different than, you know, I was thinking of Cambria, where you had that brine pond and with the fan systems and trying to bring it to a solid and then hauling it somewhere, and that project was challenged. So I was curious to see what kind of hauling mechanism we were using here. Thanks for the clarification. Mayor Delgado.
Yes, and then thank you for the presentation. This project has a very low level opposition, but one person that I've read online or letters to the editor, I'm not sure which, is concerned that pesticides coming from the ag fields, ag industry, could go through this process, this project, and end up in water that's subsequently drawn for potable. So can you sort of confirm that pesticides, what level of pesticides might get through, that they're at a safe level if they do?
With the reverse osmosis technology here and these other sources of treatment, it will eliminate any chances for pesticides to get through and be injected into the seaside aquifer. They've done extensive studies, and now the state board is looking at direct potable reuse of this type of treatment for other places.
And I think that we discussed this when this came up before. So is the monitoring of the source water and the monitoring of the effluent water sufficient to detect if what you said is actually the reality?
Yes, they have to treat a whole suite of chemicals, and they've done a long-term pilot study where they tested the influent and what's going out of the facility. And I think Monterey One can answer further in detail about what has been done for this project.
Thank you.
Mr. Young?
Yeah, what are the expected concentration levels of ammonia and other nitrogen in the effluent?
I don't remember offhand the number for that, but it is definitely higher than the background level. I think it's somewhere on the order of, I remember looking at it before, but after the dilution based on the modeling, it'll be at background levels after the zone of initial dilution of the ocean. So it'll be somewhere in the range of 5, I think it was micromolar. So it's somewhere in that range where it's basically diluted after you take into dilution factors from the visual plumes monitoring program. You'll get it back to normal normal concentrations. But Dr. Monet Berg will explain further in her presentation about the mass balance, which is really the important part of causing a harmful algal bloom. It's the mass and not the concentration. And she'll put it into perspective on how large the masses of nutrients are from other processes compared to what the facility would put out and how it's insignificant in causing harmful algal blooms.
Were you just referring to ammonia?
Not just ammonia, but total nitrogen as
well. Okay, because there isn't ammonia, right? Free ammonia in the ocean, is there?
At low levels from fish and so on, but it's generally the nitrogen that's out in the ocean, nitrate. And
do you know what the ambient background level is in this part of our near-coastal water?
I don't have that on the top of my head. I think Dr. Monet Berg, the harmful algal bloom specialist, will be able to give a little bit better perspective on that.
Mr. Johnson?
Yeah, Peter, there was one thing on slide 11 that caught my eye, and I think this is still in your bailiwick rather than Dr. Monet Bloom's. It says the project decreases nutrients to the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. On its face, that I wonder about that, because it seems like you're taking the nitrogen input is water that would otherwise flow out through another channel to the bay, and you're taking it and you're treating it, And I would assume most of that is nitrates. It's going to get pulled in the reverse osmosis process, go out a different channel, the outfall. So how is there a net reduction? It seems like it would be a push.
You're correct in many ways there. There is some removal from the treatment process and putting the nitrogen into the sludge. And from attachment 2 of the staff report, it talks about how a lot of this nitrogen that is going to go currently being discharged into freshwater systems and polluting these systems like the Blanco drain and the wreck ditch that go into the Salinas River that then go out into the surface ocean where there's light in the photic zone, those can cause harmful algal blooms there. But by putting this nitrogen through the treatment process and removing some, you are then discharging it deeper to 100 feet below the main light levels, so they're not as available for phytoplankton to bloom, and there's a net reduction in the nitrogen from...
So, okay, I understand the availability. So would the net reduction then be that some of the, in the sewage treatment process, some of the nitrogen gets gasified, is that a word, and goes up in the air, or what?
No, I think it's more, it gets bound into the sludge that then is used for land cover next door at the landfill.
Okay, got it. So it's akin to some of the agricultural experiments with wood chip reactors to try and denitrify waste. There's some denitrification going in the sewage treatment facility.
There's some. I don't think it's as effective as the wood chip bioreactors, though.
Okay, thank you.
If I may, I think most of the diversion of the nitrate is going to occur by way of that water being recycled for irrigation use in the Castroville Seawater Intrusion Project area.
And that's pre-RO then?
That's correct.
In the system. Okay. So it's going to Castroville, it's going onto the fields, it's hopefully reducing fertilizer use, popping out the tile drain and going down the Salinas River anyway, so it's probably minimal reduction. All right, thank you.
All right, I think we're ready for your speakers who have been waiting patiently and with great anticipation. Drum roll.
Good afternoon, Chairman Wolf and members of the board. My name is Allison Imamura, and I'm an associate engineer at Monterey One Water. I am officially a pinch hitter today. Paul Sciutto was here earlier. He couldn't stay because he has a family obligation, and he wanted to apologize to everyone for his lack of presence. But really, he owes the apology to me because I hadn't planned to present. Oh, thank you. Oh, yeah. There were some changes to the presentation that were made after Tammy reproduced your hard copy, and I want to really thank both Tammy and Peter and Harvey, and all the other all the other staff members that helped on this process. It's been a long process. I don't think even right after we received our last permit reissuance in 2014, we immediately called staff and started working on this permit reissuance. So we appreciate the time that was spent and the patience with us, and being all around great support and asking the right questions and letting us come to good answers. Peter already provided you a pretty good overview. I'm going to try to go as quickly as I can through the things that he's already covered in honor of time so we can get home for dinner. But this is an overview of our agency, Monterey One Water, which, as most of you probably have heard of us, we're recently changed our name to from Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Agency. We're going toward a new way of looking at water, not just in our silos, but looking at more holistically at water resources. And so the name change was partially due to our work beyond just treating wastewater. We are a joint powers authority, so we have representation on our board from a number of communities on this slide. We also have gained numerous partners, especially focused on this Pure Water Monterey project, which there are dozens of agencies and nonprofits that we've worked with toward implementing the Pure Water Monterey project. So this is, again, an overview of our services. Peter's given you most of this information already. One highlight was that we're hoping to achieve 70% recycling with the Pure Water Monterey project. The reason we can't get to 100% is because, again, the Salinas Valley Reclamation Plant that produces the tertiary water turns off every year in the wintertime. We're looking to find ways to keep more irrigation happening during the wintertime, but for now, we have excess wastewater flows still when they don't irrigate. But the Pure Water Monterey project will operate year-round, and so therefore provides additional recycled water from wastewater. We also provide quite a bit of services to our member entities in terms of source control, fats, oils, and greases, stormwater monitoring, that I wanted to kind of give you a heads up on and highlight. And we're working closely with the integrated regional water management planning processes in two separate regions. And we are also, you know, actively involved in water supply planning, stormwater planning, things like that. So just in a nutshell, we are going to be producing three types of water. We're going to be producing our secondary effluent, regulated ocean discharge, and then starting approximately May of this coming year is when the Pure Water Monterey project will begin producing water for indirect potable reuse. This is a not as clear on this screen, but this gives you an overview of really where the Pure Water Monterey project started. And it was really the demand both from the urban domestic water supplies that were needed in order for the California American Water Service Company to provide an alternative water supply source to the Carmel River and support this huge economic engine that is our hospitality industry in the Monterey area. And then also provide additional water to recycle and use for the agricultural irrigators and to meet their needs in a way besides pumping the groundwater basin that is intruded by seawater. This map shows generally where the heart of our project is the advanced water purification facility is co-located next to our regional treatment plant, and we are about 70% through with the construction of that facility. This gives you a snapshot view of past and future water supplies, a little bit relating to things that we heard during the public comment period. This is water supplies for the Monterey Peninsula area, the jurisdiction of the Monterey Peninsula Water Management District, who is our partner in implementing Pure Water Monterey. They were a primary funder for the planning and environmental of the Pure Water Monterey project. And you see in this chart the sort of gradual reduction in water use that we've been seeing in the past 10 years in our area. And then you see where we're going to be able to, with the introduction of the new Pure Water Monterey project, we're going to be able to drop the amount of Carmel River water that's used, providing that environmental benefit to the river and securing, you know, some more sustainable water supplies for the Monterey Peninsula area. This gives you just an overview concept site plan of the Pure Water Monterey project facilities. Most of the facilities are already either built or very close to being completed. This component here is a water supply, a potable water pipeline that California American Water Company has built already to enable the water that's drawn from the Seaside Basin to reach the rest of the Monterey Peninsula. The conveyance pipeline between our treatment plant and the location where we're going to be injecting the purified recycled water is shown, as well as some of our source water sites, which I'll talk about a little bit more. So just to recap, this is a topic that's close to my heart. I've been working on this project for about 6 years, and it drew me in to become a member of the Monterey One Water family team because of these great environmental benefits. Sorry, flipped ahead. Sorry, this slide looks like it kind of shifted a little. But the key environmental benefits are obviously what I talked about already. The Salinas River is going to have a benefit because of diversion of waters that are currently, you know, impaired. And instead of allowing them to go into the Salinas River, we'll be diverting those and taking them to our regional treatment plant for treatment and reuse. Obviously, the Carmel River flow increase is a benefit. We're also going to be reducing pollutant loads to the Monterey Bay, and improving the water quality in the Seaside Groundwater Basin and in the Salinas Valley Groundwater Basin by the fact that we're providing an alternate water supply to groundwater pumping. We expect to have some beneficial effect to seawater intrusion. These are the key components that are under construction currently. This photo shows this one of our key source water sites, the Blanco Drain diversion. We also have a diversion that's called the Reclamation Ditch diversion, which is similar. It's a combined urban and agricultural runoff ditch that we're going to, and actually it was in the presentation this morning, a photo of it was in the presentation by Dominic, showing the diversion structure that we recently completed construction of to divert that water to our plant. This shows our, about 3 or 4 months ago, it looks a lot different now, but that's what our site looks like, where the advanced water purification facility will be located. And then we also have, obviously, the conveyance pipeline. It's almost complete. It's about a 95% complete so that the water can be delivered from our plant to the injection sites. And then this is a picture of our injection wells. Peter mentioned the source waters that we're looking at collecting. And just to give a snapshot of quantities, you see in the irrigation months of the year, April through September, this is kind of what we expect to be using on average with full build out of the Pure Water Monterey project. You see there's like a lower use of new source waters in the winter and the wet months of the year, whereas in the summer we're gonna be bringing in those new source waters so that we can recycle those. So these are the percentages that we expect of the amount of influent coming into our regional treatment plant that will be treated. And just to give a little bit more about the source water facilities and the benefits.
Can I ask you to go back to that again? Can you, I didn't quite understand why those source waters would increase in the summer.
Oh, okay, so we are a plant that operates our reclamation project seasonally. Currently, the plant, approximately November, but it depends on rainfall and irrigation demands, we turn off the Salinas Valley Reclamation Plant because the agricultural irrigators stop irrigating, so there is no demand. We don't have adequate storage beyond a diurnal storage scenario, so we turn off the Salinas Valley Reclamation Plant. And so therefore, wastewater that comes to us this time of year becomes secondary effluent right now. With Pure Water Monterey, those wastewaters that are currently going out to the outfall will be used, not all of them, but approximately 5 million gallons per day we expect at the most will be used for Pure Water Monterey. However, we don't have the irrigation demand, so there is no need to divert new source waters into our system when we already have plenty of wastewater. If we were to divert new source waters into our system, it would be to divert them and then just discharge them to the bay. So in honor of being efficient, conserving energy, and conserving chemicals, we would not take new source waters when there's no Salinas Valley Reclamation Plant demand.
So, so the Seaside Aquifer Injection, that's part of the distribution of water that you are producing through.
Right. So our plant.
So why wouldn't it go there instead of to the ocean? Yeah.
So during the Pure Water Monterey project will operate year round on a consistent basis. Mm-hmm. We will probably actually be running the Pure Water Monterey project at a higher rate in the winter months of the year because of that excess wastewater being available to recycle.
Right.
In the summer months, we'll probably be ramping down the production from the advanced water purification facility in honor of making sure that we can continue to meet all of the agricultural irrigation demands.
Okay.
But we have the advantage of some flexibility in how much new source waters we also take in.
Okay.
So we have a lot of opportunity to do the almost like a conjunctive use decision on how much new source waters we're going to be taking in. And obviously, with our assumptions about water quality, we had to come up with a scenario in the future, what's most likely to occur. And this turned out to be a very a good conservative, and you see it speaks to normal slash wet year, mm-hmm. and building and a full reserve, because we are, as part of this project, doing also a drought reserve, and that's why in the winter months we're able to increase the capacity, how much output we have from the advanced water purification facility, mm-hmm. bank it in the Seaside Groundwater Basin, mm-hmm. and then if there is a drought year or a dry year, we would ramp down the production from the AWPF even more, mm-hmm. so that the agricultural irrigators will have a bump up in their yield.
Okay, thank you. That really helps.
Okay.
Mayor Delgado had a question.
Yeah, I was under the impression that this project would generate 3,500 acre feet. This graph seems like it maxes out around 2,600 acre feet.
Oh, right. So this graph shows monthly amounts of influent to our treatment plant. And so in order to get the full yield of 3,500 acre feet per year, we're gonna essentially work at about 330 acre feet per month.
So
300 plus or minus, is that about right, Bob? Yeah. So because we don't, so these show monthly acre feet. And so if you look at maybe a steady 330 acre feet per month, it gets to be a total of 3,500 acre feet. And part of it is that we take, the advanced water purification facility has the RO concentrate discharge, the byproduct discharge. And so there's the amount that we take in of secondary effluent into the AWPF isn't the total yield of the AWPF, because there's a 19% of the water that is rejected by the RO and goes to the outfall.
So if you add up that 19% discharge rejected water to the 300 acre feet per water you're going to actually put into the Pure Water Monterey, that leaves the majority of the water. What happens to it?
The majority of water shown on this chart?
Let's say mm-hmm. June, you have 2,600 acre feet of water, 300 goes to Pure Water Monterey, 19% goes to, you're saying, the discharge. Where's the majority of the rest of it go?
This includes the influent that is being recycled by the Salinas Valley Reclamation Plant. So it's two waste. We take the secondary effluent and it goes one of two places. And so this includes all of the influent to our plant, and some of this is used for this. Most of these months of the year, most of this that I'm kind of circling is used for recycling and agricultural irrigation.
I see. So this is the total source that you have access to, and 300 acre feet a month will be going to Pure Water Monterey.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. So just to speak more about the source water facilities, that's kind of the innovative part of this project. We had seen and have continued to see, except for this past year, a continual decrease in the amount of wastewater flowing through our system, and continual increase in the amount of demand for the Castroville Seawater Intrusion Project area, the area that receives our tertiary water. So this project takes advantage of the fact that our plant was built for much higher flows, and also the collection system was built for much higher flows, for example, from the city of Salinas. So the source water projects were planned to enable us to collect these new impaired waters and use our existing overcapacity in wastewater to convey that to our plant. This saved money on the project and also limited the impacts of constructing new pipelines to bring source water all the way to the regional treatment plant. The one exception to the use of existing infrastructure is the Blanco Drain project. That did require us to build a new pipeline under the Salinas River to bring that water into our plant, much shorter length than the other two source waters. And then, of course, we've already touched on the fact that we know that diverting these source waters will reduce the pollutant load to the Monterey Bay. And so I think there was a question about our nitrogen mass balance analysis, and this slide simply summarizes that really good work by Trussell Tech to identify where we had sources of nitrogen in the overall system, how Pure Water Monterey would take advantage of, you know, the opportunity to divert those and reduce the loads to the water bodies in the Salinas Valley. And again, there's two beneficial aspects to this. One is the overall load of nitrogen-containing substances to the bay, and then the other part is that as it is, those water bodies that are discharging nitrogen nitrates into the Salinas River are going into the water body that's a freshwater body, and they are, you know, able to be, you know, utilized by algae in the Salinas River. We're going to be removing that source of nitrogen by diverting these source waters, and so therefore discharging them in a place where they are far from the photic zone where algal blooms will develop. And I'm happy to hear that Dr. Berg, I've heard about her research, and I'm glad that she has the opportunity to provide more information on this issue after me. So after that.
Question for you.
Sure.
Did you say that the algae in the Salinas River are going to be utilizing the nitrogen?
The current situation with nitrate sources to the Salinas River is a source of algae in the Salinas River, yes.
Right, but we don't want more of that.
Right, so by diverting some of the nitrate-laden waters to our plant rather than allowing them to flow into the river was what I meant to say.
So reducing nitrogen loading to the Salinas River.
Exactly.
Okay.
May I ask a question on the prior, your last slide?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you. Maybe just because it's late in the day. So I'm looking at your table. And to the right, second line, it says may increase nitrogen load due to RO concentrate. But your bottom line is it decreases with pure water Monterey due to removal through the RTP.
Yes.
So
how does that
increase get turned around?
So there was a question about this earlier too. There's quite a bit of nitrogen that is attached to solids, and so those nitrogen molecules and nitrates that are attached to solids, our plant does an excellent job of removing all solids, and so there's a large load of nitrogen that we're going to be able to remove through our treatment processes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So just to beat a dead horse, you decrease it with the nitrogen load to the photic zone, then you increase that by dumping it into the river, but the sum total is a net decrease.
There's no discharge associated to the river for this, but...
Right. By decreasing what goes into the river,
right.
That's a help. And then by increasing what goes into the ocean, that's an increase in nitrogen. But if you add the two together, the sum total is that there's a decrease
right.
in nitrogen.
Yeah. There's no new sources of nitrogen. What we're doing is providing that opportunity to take waters that have nitrate, treat them, and then remove some of that nitrate before it's discharged deep to the ocean.
How deep is the outfall?
It is a little bit over 100 feet deep.
And the photic zone in this area goes down
how
far?
I would recommend that you save that for the next speaker, because she definitely knows about, you know, the photic zone, the oceanography, and the ocean science on harmful algal blooms.
All right, so
thank you.
We can thank you very much, and appreciate your impromptu presentation.
Thank you.
Home run on the pinch hit.
All right, so our next speaker, if you could introduce our next speaker, please. Thank you.
Thank you for inviting me here today to give this overview on nutrient inputs into Monterey Bay from wastewater. Yes, my name is Minae Berg, and I'm from Applied Marine Sciences. So I'll be talking about nutrient inputs into Monterey Bay and from wastewater and other sources, including rivers and upwelling. and the influence on phytoplankton blooms in Monterey Bay. So first, this is just a brief overview of the things that I'll cover. I'll cover nitrogen discharge by Monterey One Water and nitrogen sources and concentrations in Monterey Bay. And then I'll talk a little bit about upwelling as a source of nitrogen, and then phytoplankton blooms, the factors that control their initiation and proliferation, and the mass of nitrogen that you need to sustain a bloom. So this slide here is of nitrogen load from wastewater effluent discharged by Monterey One Water. So the two most important forms of nitrogen is nitrate and ammonium in this effluent. So nitrate is in the left panel and ammonium load is in the right on the right panel in blue, nitrate in red. And so the first thing you notice, as the other speakers have pointed out, is that most of the load is during the wet season when water is not being reclaimed for irrigation. So during the dry season, you get very little discharge of nitrogen to Monterey Bay. And here, I actually have the mean load in kilograms per day of ammonium. So at a pH of 8, the ammonia is mainly in the form of ammonium. So just so you guys know, I am calling ammonia for ammonium. So as you can see, most of the nitrogen is in the form of ammonium being discharged. And the ammonium being discharged by Monterey One Water comprises about 38% of the total nitrogen load coming from wastewater into Monterey Bay. So there are four dischargers, Santa Cruz, Watsonville, Monterey One Water, and Carmel Area Wastewater District. And then this discharge of ammonium specifically constitutes about 11% of the permit limit to Monterey One Water on an annual basis. So if we compare discharge from wastewater, now I'm talking about all the wastewater that discharges into Monterey Bay. So from all the four discharges to nitrogen load from rivers, and these include the San Lorenzo, the Salinas, Pajaro, and Carmel rivers. You can see that it's really variable from year to year. Well, the wastewater load is quite consistent from year to year, but obviously the river load is variable depending on whether it's a wet year or a dry year. But if you average across years, then the discharge from wastewater, or the load from wastewater, is about 55%, and from river water, it's about 45%. I should mention that the load from rivers in this graph here does not include the load of nitrogen coming from the Elkhorn Slough. And we know from different scientific publications that that can be quite substantial. And it's not included here in these calculations. So next, I want to compare the load from rivers and wastewater to the load of nitrogen from upwelling. So these numbers here give you a sense of how important the three different sources are. So basically, upwelling constitutes about 99.6% of the nitrogen that's loaded into Monterey Bay, compared with the 0.4% from rivers and wastewater. And so, as you can see from this mass balance here, upwelling is really the driving source of the nitrogen concentrations that we measure in Monterey Bay. And that's illustrated in these graphs here. This is taken from a paper by Pennington and Chavez in 2000. And so what you're looking at here is along the x-axis, different months of the year. And then the top panel is temperature, the middle panel is salinity, and the bottom panel is nitrate concentrations. And so if you focus on the month of June, which is right in the middle of the graph, you see that there is cold water coming from the bottom all the way up to the surface, and that's the upwelled water. And this water has a higher salinity than the surface water in Monterey Bay, which you see in the second graph, and it also has a higher nitrate concentration. So here you see the nitrate being, or Monterey Bay water being recharged with nitrate from upwelling. And background concentrations of nitrate, depending on the month, vary between 0 and 5 micromoles per liter, except during the peak upwelling period in about June, they can go up to around 10. Yeah?
Yes. Thank you. I do want to ask you a question that came up in the, at least for me, came up in the prior presentation. So upwelling to me suggests, and maybe it's a directional thing, is it coming from north or the south, but mm-hmm. upwelling means that it's dredging up the nitrogen that's sitting in the benthic region, the deepest part of the bay. And in the prior presentation, the summary of change in nitrogen loading to the bay, there was that one table that I was looking at in the last slide, where it was noted that nitrogen load to the deep ocean outfall is part of how they are dispersing nitrogen. So if they're dispersing nitrogen to the deepest ocean outfall that they have, isn't that increasing the amount of nitrogen that is then being circulated through upwelling and coming back up? Or am I putting that together wrong?
Yeah, no, you are putting that together right. And so you have to keep in mind that this is adding a source of nitrogen that, when averaged across Monterey Bay, contributes 0.2% to the total nitrogen.
Okay.
So that nitrogen coming from the outfall is diluted and mixed with the nitrogen that's in the deep water mm-hmm. Almost instantaneously, mm-hmm. and there's no trace of it,
okay.
really.
Okay.
Because the amount is so small.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And so the next slide here, I show that nitrate concentrations in Monterey Bay are in fact not static. They change over time. And one of the driving forces of changes in nitrate concentrations, and when I say nitrate concentrations, nitrate is the main source of nitrogen in Monterey Bay. So you can take it as total nitrogen in effect. So for example, if you look at this top panel in the graph, so what this graph is showing is the anomaly, basically the deviation from the long-term mean nitrate concentrations. So you see up until 1998, nitrate concentrations were moderate, and then there was a large-scale climatic event. It's called the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, change sign from being in a warm phase to a cold phase. And then after 1998, there was increased upwelling activity. And so you see higher nitrate concentrations in the water. And then if you look at the bottom panel, which is chlorophyll, and chlorophyll is the index of phytoplankton biomass, and I use phytoplankton interchangeably with algae, so those are the same thing. And you see an increase in the chlorophyll concentrations, basically meaning you have more algal biomass in Monterey Bay following this large-scale climatic event.
You know, I got lost a little bit. because, you know, you were using micromoles per liter, and so
yes,
I tend some time to think in terms of ppm, right or wrong, and then he tells me that I need to multiply ppm by the weight of a solution, then divide by 1 million to compute the mass of a compound. I'm like, maybe you can. I couldn't get my hands around the micromoles in terms of, you know, unit of measurements.
Yeah. So there is, I forget now, what is the conversion between micromole and ppm? Is it 1-to-1? Is it basically?
No, it says multiply ppm by the weight of a solution, then divide by 1 million to compute the mass of a compound. I'm just struggling with a measurement unit, which I'm not used to. Can you come to the mic?
14.
You know, I'm not challenging your numbers. I'm just trying in my head to say, okay.
Yeah, so micromoles is similar to ppb, which is similar to ppm, you know? And so if we can to convert micromoles to ppb, we just have to multiply it by the molecular weight of nitrate.
But that's micromole nitrogen.
Right. So we'll multiply it by 14 is the first step, and then to go from ppb to ppm, we have to divide it by.
Listen, you guys, we deal in parts per million, and so you're dealing with a molarity. So it's like we're talking two different languages here.
Right.
We're not going to go through calculations. I understand the trend in the graph. Mm-hmm. That's obvious.
I think we should focus on that for right now. And also keep in mind that all the units in this presentation are in micromoles. And so you can just look at them relatively. And so, for example, if you ask a question, I'll give you the answer in micromoles. And then if you've seen on a graph, well, the background concentration is 5, and I tell you the answer is 714, then you have a relative sense of how 5 compares with 714. 5 would be the background concentration of nitrate in Monterey Bay. 714 would be the concentration of ammonium in the Monterey 1 water effluent when it hits the deep water. Then it's diluted like 145-fold the dilution zone.
Do you have a slide that shows that? Because that's really, I think, what we want to see.
I don't have a slide. I'm just telling you. And if you divide 714 by 145, you get 5. So you're back to background concentrations. Except, I should mention, then you're back to background concentrations in the surface. And that's not the same as background concentrations at deep. The concentrations in the deep water are much greater. They're around, so if you look at the bottom panel here for nitrate, if you can see the red, is that 30 micromoles per liter? I can't actually see from here. 30, yeah. Okay, so after dilution, the Monterey 1 water effluent nitrogen concentration is several fold lower than the background concentration at the depth that it's discharged. Okay, so I talked a little bit about how upwelling changes through time, mainly through phase changes in the Pacific Decadal Oscillation and other large-scale climatic events. And so now I just wanted to talk a little bit more about upwelling and how it impacts nitrogen concentrations in Monterey Bay and also really distribution of phytoplankton. So upwelling doesn't occur all along the coast. It occurs at specific loci. So there's an upwelling locus right north and right south of Monterey Bay. The north one occurs at about Año Nuevo, and then the south one at Point Sur. And when they're, the winds drive upwelling. So when there's weak winds, there's weak upwelling, and you get less upwelling water mixed into Monterey Bay. When there are strong winds, you get more upwelling happening, and more of that water is mixed into Monterey Bay. Also, when there is strong upwelling, the prevailing surface currents are from onshore to offshore in the direction of those white arrows there. So there, that's the upwelling mode. And then during July through December, you have what it's called the relaxation mode, and this is when the winds change direction, and rather than upwelling, you get an onshore current of surface water. So the surface waters tend to heat up, and you don't get mixing of cold, nutrient-rich water from the bottom. And what tends to occur during the relaxation mode is stratification of the water. That means that there's a density difference in the surface water from the bottom water, and that density difference basically prevents phytoplankton from mixing down into the deeper water, and it traps them in the surface water where there's more light. And that's the time when you tend to get blooms. So actually, what I just said now, I'm going to repeat in this slide here. So one of the most important factors for bloom initiation, so the initiation of rapid phytoplankton or algal growth, is stratification of the water. So these little green dots here represent phytoplankton. So when you have a well-mixed water column as during upwelling periods, then the phytoplankton are mixing below this euphotic zone where it's dark and they can't grow. So the more time they spend down there relative to the time they spend at the surface determines their growth rate, really. And so when the water column stratifies, this density difference really prevents the phytoplankton from mixing down below. And so they are kept at the surface where there's plenty of sunlight, and that's when they are able to increase their growth rate. And typically what happens is that the surface layer also then warms up, and the warmer the water is, the faster phytoplankton can grow. And so after the bloom is initiated through stratification, the intensity of the bloom will depend on how long the water column stays stratified and the concentrations of nutrients in the surface layer, because phytoplankton need nutrients to grow. So these graphs here show the seasonal changes in phytoplankton abundance over the course of the year in Monterey Bay. And what I'm showing you here are typical chlorophyll and phytoplankton biomass values. So if we actually skip right to the bottom panel, which is labeled B, chlorophyll, it shows that the peak in chlorophyll or phytoplankton biomass really occurs between April and July, and it's between 3 to 8 microgram chlorophyll per liter. And then outside of this period, the chlorophyll concentration is between 1 to 3 microgram chlorophyll per liter. So these concentrations are very low. If you compare this to other estuaries, for example, on the East Coast, a regular background concentration of chlorophyll in Chesapeake Bay, non-bloom, would be around 25 microgram per liter. And a bloom concentration during the spring bloom would be somewhere between 50 to 100 microgram chlorophyll per liter. And that's normal. for an East Coast estuary, for example. So these are really very low values.
I mean, does that mean it does not take much nitrogen to initiate a bloom on the West Coast versus the East Coast?
No, well, actually, one of the reasons that the concentrations are, there is quite a bit, if you look at the nitrogen mass throughout the water column, there is quite a bit, but one of the factors that limit biomass accumulation in Monterey Bay is the mixing, is the upwelling, because the upwelling turns the water column, whereas in other places where you see more phytoplankton biomass, you don't have that mixing. And so the whole West Coast here, because you have that upwelling regime, it really keeps phytoplankton biomass accumulation in check.
Have you tracked West Coast algal blooms over the last, say, 50 years, 60 years?
That graph is coming. Two slides from now, right. Yes. So there's a lab at UCSC run by Dr. Rafe Cadella, and he tracks that. And so I have a slide or graph from one of the most recent publications coming out of his lab showing that. So I just want to go over slide C here. That shows where phytoplankton biomass tends to accumulate in Monterey Bay. And if you look at this, you see that phytoplankton tend to start growing in the northeast corner of Monterey Bay, and that is because this little corner right there in Capitola is in what's called the upwelling shadow, and basically you don't get that mixing and churning of the water, and the water tends to be, the surface water warmer here, and it tends to stratify more easily. And so this is where you get initiation of blooms. A lot of times. And here's another slide showing the initiation of the bloom in that northeast corner. If you look at the top left panel here that says A, and then you keep going, and then the bottom right panel shows increase in biomass and then spreading to other regions of Monterey Bay. So the blooms I talked about previously, those are the ones initiated inside Monterey Bay. This slide here shows a picture of the west coast of the U.S., from Mexico all the way up to Alaska. And this shows a bloom that started offshore on the continental shelf in 2015, and this is a red tide bloom. A red tide is usually caused by a species of phytoplankton that produces toxin. And this was a domoic acid producing phytoplankton. And this came about due to abnormally high and warm surface water temperatures. It stratified the water, and then that water that was seeded with harmful algal bloom species was advected into coastal bays from spring storms, and it continued to grow. So here's the slide I was talking about with the record of harmful algal blooms in Monterey Bay. So on the y-axis are different years going from 2005 to 2014. And this graph is in the paper by Shulian et al., 2017, that reference on the bottom. And then on the x-axis, you have different months of the year, and the color indicates the chlorophyll concentration. So a lot of these blooms, harmful algal blooms, they occur in the fall when the surface water is warmer, upwelling is more sporadic, and stratification occurs more frequently. So when the water stratify, these blooms tend to occur, and they tend to be more intense than spring blooms, meaning that the chlorophyll concentrations are higher during these blooms than during the spring in the slide I showed earlier where the chlorophyll varied between 3 and 8 typically. Here, these blooms can vary between 30 and 70 microgram chlorophyll, with the exception of a bloom that occurred in 2010 that got all the way up to 200 microgram chlorophyll per liter.
How does one eradicate a harmful alga bloom?
So I think that would be very difficult. So these blooms are very often sustained by episodic upwelling preceding the bloom. So for example, you will have this upwelling event occurring in September, and then the whole water column becomes charged with nitrogen, and then you get a stratification event, the winds all of a sudden die down, and the water becomes totally still. The surface stratifies. It's been recently recharged with nitrogen from upwelling throughout the bay, and then the algal growth exponential just takes off. And so the only way really to cut this out is to stop upwelling in the fall specifically. But other sources of nutrients that sustain these blooms is transport of the Elkhorn Slough plume by the Davidson Current. It transported up coast, so from south to north, and into the northeast corner, and also canyon nutrient pumping. So basically, there are internal tides in Monterey Bay, and these tides, they push nutrients from the canyon up into the surface water on each tidal cycle. So this is a back-of-the-envelope calculation that I did real quick just to illustrate the amount of nitrogen you need to sustain one of these harmful algal blooms. So the first line is basically a small-size bloom, and the second line is a large-size bloom. So a small-size bloom would be 5 square kilometers in size, and it would contain 6.2 × 10^12 microgram chlorophyll in terms of biomass. And then the nitrogen requirement is in the third column. And then in the fourth column, I have how the percent of that nitrogen requirement that Monterey One Water nitrogen load can sustain. And as you can see, these are all, I mean, it's less than 0.2% of the nitrogen requirement of a bloom, actually, per day. So that also gives you a sense for how much nitrogen you need in order to produce a harmful algal bloom like this. And so here are just some quick summaries of the things that I went over in the slides. Basically, the blooms in Monterey Bay are initiated by stratification events. They start in the northeast corner of Monterey Bay. They're fueled by large nutrient infusions from upwelling generally. And also, a recent paper out of the Cudella lab doing statistical analyses show that the blooms are not correlated with riverine and wastewater effluent discharges. And also, as the back of the envelope calculation just demonstrated, but blooms can also be initiated outside of Monterey Bay. They're initiated by large-scale climatic events, for example, that caused the warm blob, the warming of the surface water that led to the massive red tide event of 2015. Blooms that occur on the shelf can occur in spring, summer, and fall. And they're also fueled by large nutrient infusions from upwelling. And they would then be advected into coastal bays by storms and winds. Thank you. That's all I had.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Chung.
One quick question here. I'm looking at slide number 8 here. Nitrogen concentrations in Monterey Bay trend over time. Okay, so both the nitrogen, I'm not sure what, is that 60 meter nitrate anomalies?
Yes.
Is that a depth? Okay.
That's the depth, yeah. So they, so here, rather than looking at surface concentrations, they're looking at deep water concentrations, because the concentration at deep water is, gives you a sense of the concentration that will be there to fuel phytoplankton growth when it's pushed into the surface.
Right.
Because once it gets to the surface, it's depleted by the phytoplankton, so you can't tell whether it was 20 micromoles being pushed up or 60 micromoles being pushed up.
Got it.
Yeah.
So looking at, and I see the bottom graph is chlorophyll anomalies at the surface.
Yes.
So clearly both of those graphs have an upward trend.
Since 1998, yeah.
Now, is that, what's that driven by? Is that driven by increased loading, or is that basically driven by increased temperature, or do we have a sense?
Yes, so most scientists think that, so there's something called the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, which is a large-scale climate pattern, and the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, or the PDO, it has different phases. It has a warm phase and a cold phase, and it will switch between the two quite abruptly. And so prior to 1998, the PDO was in a warm phase, and after 1998, it's now in a cold phase, so it switched signs.
So if we took this graph and made it a 30-year graph, or a so made it go back to the 70s, would we then not see this trend line? We would see some high periods,
this is not really a trend line. You see that there's an abrupt shift at 1998.
Shift.
Yeah, so then if you go back further, you will see another shift where it goes back the other way.
So do we expect it to go back down, or is general ocean warming going to mean that the new normal creeps up?
I don't know. I don't know what you can expect in
okay.
the future.
And
yeah.
But the nitrate loading, or the nitrate levels here,
yeah.
I guess my question is that driven by temperature, or is that driven by loading? Is there some cumulative result of the nitrate coming? Because it's not just coming from sewage treatment plants. There's a bunch of nitrate coming down rivers and such. Is there a cumulative effect of that? Or is it all diluted in a vast ocean, and there's really, the amounts are so minor as to not make a difference even over time?
Yes, yes, the latter is true. And so here, this pattern that you see is driven by changes in upwelling. We now have much more frequent upwelling since the change in sign of the PDO. And so, as I showed earlier, when you calculate, you do a mass balance of the sources of nitrogen to Monterey Bay, the amounts that are put into Monterey Bay, upwelling constitutes 99.6%. So wastewater and river water is really minor in terms of the nitrogen budget of Monterey Bay.
Right, and the rest is background, right? Where's the rest coming from?
Upwelling.
Upwelling, okay.
Yeah.
So, and is that just generally so connected to the rest of the ocean?
Exactly, okay. Yes, yes. So that water, the deep water, is mainly, the oceans are all connected. And there's actually something called the deep ocean conveyor belt. And it's a current, and I think it has a residence time of about 200 years. And so it takes 200 years for water to travel all around all the oceans and then come back.
So this is quite interesting because, and I'm not deeply involved or paying attention to the progression of understanding of these harmful algal blooms, although I'm aware of the priority of understanding what the science can tell us about it. But in prior explanations, we really saw a correlation between rivers, the discharge of the coastal confluent streams, and there was a suggestion that legacy DDT had some, there was some component of that that was contributing to.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? What did you just say? CDT?
DDT.
Oh, DDT, yeah.
So this model that you're showing us today is like flipped. So that you're saying the upwelling, which is this broader, more long-term, and much more oceanographic than just, and less involved with the interface of freshwater pesticides and other nutrients and other contaminants flowing out of the rivers, that really is a minor element of it. And really what we're seeing is this much bigger picture that happens to go into this little cycle, microcycle in Monterey Bay in a way that we don't see in many places along the coast. I mean, that seems to, those harmful algal blooms occur in specific places. They're not just hugging the coast all the way down seasonally. So it's just, I guess it's just me trying to come to grips with the idea that what we've been thinking and looking at legacy pollutants coming out of these rivers, especially in the agricultural areas feeding into Monterey Bay, that was the problem that causing harmful algal blooms. And you're saying, nope, that's a very minor contribution.
Okay, so let me just see. So DDT is a pesticide, and it does not contribute to a bloom. Quite the contrary. That would be a toxin that Exactly. would negatively impact phytoplankton. So, and also upwelling is probably not a source of DDT. So probably there is no
right.
DDT in deep water. So what does help phytoplankton grow is nutrients. And so now there are plenty of nutrients in the river water, but when you have a big body like Monterey Bay and you're trying to quantify the sources of nutrients which stimulate algal growth, you have to take into account upwelling. And so that's why the calculus for figuring out links between nutrients and harmful algal blooms include upwelling. But in terms of figuring out factors important for loading of DDT to Monterey Bay, then you're really looking at two main sources only, and that's wastewater and river water. Based on the work that we do for SeaClean, where we monitor DDT in wastewater and river water, we know that river water provides the bulk by far of DDT loading into Monterey Bay, especially the Pajaro River.
Good. Thank you for separating those out for me. But I just want to confirm for myself that what we were talking about even 5 years ago in terms of understanding the source constituents of harmful algal blooms, you've really presented a picture that diminishes the river land-based use contribution, and really talking about more ambient level levels of nitrogen in the deep ocean that is circulating globally.
Right.
Okay. Got it.
So
perfect.
Yay.
Well said. Right.
So what I'd like to do is kind of very gently steer us to. Thank you so much. I'd like to steer us gently to the ultimate goal here, which is to need a vote on adopting an order, which is modifying an existing permit. I think one of my takeaways, by the way, in regard to some of the cyclicity that we're experiencing, when you look at PDO, it's one thing, but it also is increasingly, I think, understood that PDO impacts the severities of El Niños, La Niñas. So it's not an exact science. Yeah, we can have our ppm, micrograms per liter, put it in a spatial form, but we're dealing with nature here. So I think we need to remind ourselves that. So
If we don't, I would like to give you the opportunity to make some closing comments and recommendation as staff in regard to this order to that we need to adopt.
I think at this point, we just continue to recommend adoption of the order.
With the changes from the supplemental sheet.
Okay. So, do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All right. Roll call, please.
For the record, Monica, who gets Hunter. A second?
Okay.
Thank you.
Dr. Wolf?
Approved.
Dr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Delgado?
This is really a wonderful project. Thank you. Yes. I feel like this is a...
Ms. Gray?
Aye.
Ms. Harlan?
Yes.
Mr. Johnson?
Yes.
Mr. Young?
Yes.
All right. Motion approved. Thank you. That concludes this item 8. And I did not have public speaker cards for this item, which then brings us to the last item of the day, item 9, enforcement. Thank you, gentlemen. That includes both of you, by the way.